Chapter 40. Dawn. And that was how the great sage Santa defeated the wicked Krampas and banished the child stealer from the world, his talisman gifts protecting the virtuous children from the evil beasts, Jin explained. Mei Ling raised an eyebrow at the fanciful story. They were walking to the shrine as the sun disappeared behind the hills and twilight came. But the village was not plunged into darkness. Paper lanterns cast red shadows, and giant fires blazed as the village gathered. Little Xian gasped from his perch on Chung Ki's back, eyeing the stuffed dragon he had received.
So this is a protective talisman that can ward off evil? Little Xian said.
Jin shook his head. That's what they started out as, but... Jin pointed to the trinket Little Xian held. That's just a toy. Nothing protective about it. The boy pouted, but didn't seem too upset. He was obviously thinking about San Ta chasing the demon all over the world on his trusty horned steed. He grinned and settled on the great boar's back, peering beside the horn tied to the pig's head.
My eyes see all the wicked and all the righteous, Little Xian cheered to himself. Yah! Charge, Chung Ki! Let's jump over an ocean in a single leap!
The boar obligingly trotted forwards, chuffing with amusement, until he was interrupted.
Chung Ki, to the shrine, please, not on an adventure, Mei Ling said reproachfully.
The boar stopped in his tracks and turned to the woman. Somehow, he managed to pout. Mei Ling was having none of it.
Shrine,
she stated simply, and both boar and boy slumped.
All right, Krampas,
Little Xian muttered.
What was that?
Nothing,
Xian yelped, then under his breath said,
Demon sister.
Mei Ling eyed his back.
He's getting entirely too cheeky.
She sighed. Jin shrugged. He can always put on some horns and haunt the end of his bed. Krampas liked naughty children the most. His tone made it clear he was joking. Mei Ling's eyes, on the other hand, gleamed with a kind of gleeful malice only an elder sibling could possess. That boy was going to get the wake up of a lifetime. Jin sighed and wrapped an arm around her. So, what's happening at the shrine? I know most people pray for a good year, but I get the feeling this is more than that. Mei Ling smiled.
You'll see very shortly. A lot of the villages around here do this.
They had all gathered at the shrine when, suddenly, a hush swept over the crowd. Hong Xian the Elder strode from his home. His robes were the colors of the dawn, reds, oranges, hints of pinks, and purples spread out like the sunrise. On his face, he wore a mask, a stylized depiction of the sun. He carried a staff with loose rings on it. Jin's eyes widened at his measured steps and his almost trance-like breathing. The crowd parted for him as he strode into the ring of braziers that had been constructed, burning low with barely noticeable flames. From the other side of the village came Yao Chuo, his robes dark shades of blacks and deep purples, the mask of the moon on his face. He took up position outside the ring before a massive drum. They both stood, absolutely silent, as they waited. A gong sounded. The last of the twilight faded away, overtaken by the longest night. The drums began to pound, slowly at first, and then with increasing ferocity, an ancient beat that had burned its way into Mei Ling's memories. Hong Xian danced. His body moved through old forms, passed down from father to son for generations, a tradition that had endured the trials of centuries. His bright robe whirled, his feet stomped, the staff jangled and chimed as it went through the motions that had remained unchanged since their inception. For nearly 10 minutes, the dance continued, Xian's body never stopping its movements, his breath just as perfectly steady as it had been at the start. The gong sounded again. The drums pounded. The dance continued, repeating its first movements. Some villagers broke off at the sound of the gong, those with children too young to even attempt to stay up all night. But most stayed, standing together in front of the shrine. Some had their heads bowed in prayer. Some simply stood with their family. Others started to dance as well, leading their children through old steps. He's going to go all night, isn't he? Jin whispered to Mei Ling. She looked up at her betrothed. His eyes were locked on her father's form, genuine respect shining in them.
Until the sun rises again, she confirmed.
Is there anything I can do to help? Jin asked.
The fires are to get higher throughout the night. We put on more wood and stoke the fires higher, a beacon to call back the sun. You can help by adding to those if you really want to. They'll start stoking the fire in 3 more repetitions, and then every 10 after that.
Jin nodded, still entranced by her father's dance.
Until that time, come here.
She grabbed his hand and dragged him off to the side, where the rest of the people danced.
These are the steps for this one, she said, looking around at the couples.
Jin's eyes lit up with happiness as she shared her village's traditions with him. Bidi's night was extremely pleasant. He now understood why the great healing sage wished to visit their great master as often as she did. The time spent without Sister Rizu had been a trying one. Her company was a balm upon his soul, her presence a calming draft, and her weight on his back a welcome pressure. It was even more welcome to hear of her time spent in this place, apprenticing under the great healing sage. She spoke with great enthusiasm of medicines and concoctions, and though he comprehended a bare fraction of what she said, he enjoyed hearing about what she had learned. The great master was right, as always. Spending time with one's friends and family upon the solstice was only fitting, even if they were here instead of on their blessed Faram. His fellow disciples had been received with great enthusiasm by the mortals, especially Brother Chung Ki, who basked in their attention. Bidi kept himself largely apart. Most pointed covetously at his hat, a gift from the great master, so he had retreated to the rooftops lest they pester him enough to draw his ire. Brother Chung Ki was already a fixture, beloved by the children. Bidi's kindly brother let them clamber all over his body without reservations, and in doing so he received much of their affection. Bidi could not imagine what he liked in their screams. They were most annoying. But to each their own. The only other who remained aloof was Sister Tigu, who was consumed with the training aid the great master had gifted to her. She had not put it down since she had received it, and even now was asleep in the sleigh, curled around the gift. Bidi sighed in contentment as the instruments below clanged. The mortal's dance was mildly entertaining, but his movements were slow. On the third repetition, he turned his gaze away from their dance and onto the heavens, to the moon. The moon, which had been obscured by the clouds, was revealed. The full moon. It was auspicious that the longest night of the year was also the night with the brightest moon. It took over for the sun, shining its light upon the world. He gazed upon the celestial body, pondering upon this cycle. If there was the longest night, there was also the longest day. His awareness back then had been limited, so he could not remember seeing this longest day. He pondered, not for the first time, on the moon's counterpart. Though it was his duty to herald its coming, he could not bring himself to love the sun like he did the moon. He could not observe it directly. Its light gave life, but it was also harsh and unforgiving, gazing sternly down upon the world. He knew he would have to spend more time pondering the predicament in order to be able to truly comprehend the cycles. Still, he had decided to complete his contemplations upon the lunar glory first. He gazed upon the moon as it traveled across the sky, waiting for the sun to reclaim its rightful place. He noticed there was a brighter glow coming from beneath, and he turned his attention to it. Bidi chastised himself. He had been arrogant again, believing that because they were mortal, it meant they were naturally inferior. The mortal was still dancing, the other still drumming. The snow had melted entirely around his legs, and the flames around the dancers surged with passion and energy. What had started humbly was now a mesmerizing sight. The man still danced with skill, his breath as perfect as Bidi's own, despite having so little chi he might as well have none. The chi that was around the dancer seemed to be invigorated by the great master's own energy. It danced through the air, pulsing in time to the dancer and the drummer, yet not touching them. It was a formation of fire, and yet it did not seem to be really doing anything. He observed the chi carefully and the way it moved. It was gathering and dancing, swirling and twisting. It spiraled. It cycled. The day into night, the night into day. He watched the dance, watching the dancer's breathing, his movement, and his kicks. He paused, examining the performance more closely. As thin as could be, there was a thread trailing from the formation and into the distance. "Hold on, please, Sister Rizu," he requested, and at her acknowledgement, he leapt into the air. His ability to fly was limited. His legs were more powerful than his wings. Still, just this once, he offered an apology to the heavens, ascending high into the sky. So high he reached the clouds, and then surpassed them. So high it was hard to breathe. He turned around to gaze upon the world. The tiny thread of flame that circled around the dancers went off into the distance. Bidi saw from this highest perch another spot of fire. It was not as grand as the fire tended to by the great master, though the tiny thread was trying to invigorate this one as well. He saw the tiny spots of flame, and in his mind's eye he saw some sort of formation stretching out across the landscape, a web that went farther than he could see, even from all the way up here. A formation that, unless he missed his mark, covered 100,000 farams in distance. But there were empty spaces in this grand web, dark spots in a formation of fire. Something stirred at the back of his mind, yet it did not coalesce. "What is this?" he thought curiously. "What is this formation of fire?" He and Sister Rizu fell back down to the earth, alighting upon the roof of the house again. He pondered deeply what he had seen, and yet he stayed upon the ground. It was a massive formation, as far as he could tell. A curiosity was struck. What was it? What was it for? The question ate at him. Just what was the great formation fading into the distance? What could require something so mind-bogglingly huge? He shook his head. He need not break that code tonight. He watched the man diligently instead as the moon crossed the sky and light began to return to the world. The swirling bands of chi dispersed. The sun broke the horizon, the great lord of the heavens peeking out almost shyly from behind the hill. The world seemed to sigh contentedly as the celestial body revealed itself. And in its deep, deep slumber, the earth stirred once more. Bidi shouted his greeting as the warm rays touched his body. The humans below and his fellow disciples all added their voices. Even Tigu yowled from where she was on the sleigh, and Washi splashed happily. It was nothing more and nothing less than a beautiful view. Hongxian staggered to a stop as the sun crested the horizon. Those who were still awake cheered as the first light of dawn hit them, including his own son, who he could hear shouting with glee that he had made it. It got more challenging every year. His body was steadily wearing down. There would soon come a year when he couldn't perform this dance at all. And yet this year, Xian's body felt as though it was on fire. His breath had finally failed him and he nearly fell to his knees, yet instead of bone-deep exhaustion, he felt so alive. A hand on his back steadied him before he could fall. "Are you all right, father?" a male voice asked. It was still strange to hear those words out of Jin's mouth. They were not family yet, but his eyes were full of genuine concern. Jin's hand was gently pressed against his back, and yet it felt like the entire world was supporting his exhausted body. His breathing evened out and his shaking legs steadied, just in time for his actual son to collide with his middle. If Jin's hand hadn't been there, he would have been thrown onto his back. His son grinned toothily up at him.
"I did it!"
he cheered again, through the bags under his eyes. His hand rested on his son's head.
"I'm proud of you,"
he rasped, his throat terribly parched. His legs wobbled again.
"Jin, help me sit."
The man nodded at his request. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the Song brothers helping Brother Chu. The poor man was without any family of his own this year, with Mei Hua unable to make it back home, but he would still be well cared for. Jin helped him walk out of the circle of snow. It was a light touch, so soft that he felt like he was walking of his own power, unlike last year, where they'd had to carry him back to his home. He was escorted to the shrine, where he was gently sat down. His daughter came with water and helped him drink when his hands shook too badly. He gazed out over the world, the sun rising up from its slumber. In contrast, his youngest was in his lap, having finally succumbed to his slumber. His daughter supported him on one side. On the other was his soon-to-be son. The shakes stilled. A daughter on the left, a new son on the right. The sun illuminated their faces as they sat with him, allowing him to truly enjoy the rising sun for the first time in years. He closed his eyes in contentment, settling his breathing as golden light warmed his face.